A hymn tune written by Thomas Tallis, who died in 1585. In the same year, an institution was conceived. Queen Elizabeth granted a charter for the establishment of a grammar school in Halifax, Heath Grammar School. One of Heath Grammar School's early successors was Jess Ramsden. Eric Webster of the Halifax Antiquarian Society has followed Ramsden's career.
From about 1744 until 1747, we think, at that time he was between 9 and 12 years old. He was at the school during the mastership of a Mr. Ogden, who was the 11th master in office following Dr. Favour. And Ramsden eventually became one of the most celebrated makers of mathematical instruments that England has ever produced. He stayed at the school for 3 years, I say, and then he went on to do an apprenticeship in the wool trade, but in the meantime he'd also had some tuition from a relative who lived in North Yorkshire, and this was on the main subject of mathematics and science, to which he had much more much more liking than he had for the wool trade. When he was 20 he transferred himself to London, and for a short time he was in the cloth trade, but he still had this longing to get into something to do with mathematics. Well, after doing this an apprenticeship with a mathematical instrument maker, he eventually set himself up in business on his own account, and again eventually he employed as many as 60 men, craftsmen and workmen, making all kinds of mathematical instruments. His particular skill was in engraving and in designing instruments and apparatus for use in the optical and medical, astronomical and surveying fields. It's far from being just another maker. Some of his products, in fact, went around the world with Sir Joseph Banks, who of course in turn went around the world with Captain Cook.
So without Ramsden and his Heath education, Captain Cook might have got lost, might he?
He could, yes. Perhaps it would be a little bit too presumptuous to think that between the years of 9 and 12, but nevertheless the grounding must have been there, wasn't it?
But Jess Ramsden's ingenuity did not stop at optical instruments.
He eventually made another machine which he patented, of course, which was a dividing head, and this was used in the machine tool industry, and I must say that it was must have been one of the really basic inventions of its time, because it enabled in the manufacture of lathes, you have to have a lead screw which then enables you to cut screw threads of all kinds, and the way that this is divided up, of course, was done by Jess Ramsden. And so our own big machine tool industry of former years owed quite a lot to a Halifax boy.
Jess Ramsden left Heath in 1747. Carl Whittam started in 1906.
When I first joined, Mr. Reith was headmaster. I don't remember him, but I remember going to his funeral when I was in the first form. The science master, Mr. Crump, Billy Crump, was a fine chap. He took over. He was the sixth form master. He took over until a new head was appointed, who was Mr. W. E. Edwards.
And what was discipline like?
Lines. Lines and lines and lines. And in my spare time, I used to write up a stock of lines to be ready for any imminent punishment.
So, were you naughty?
Oh, there was a cane. They used to cane. But that was... It's strange that you should remind me of this. Caning was a disgrace in those days. If you'd been caned, you'd done something very wrong.
Carl Whittam has some sporting memories.
In those days, the school played soccer. And up the whole of the time I was there, soccer was the football game. And towards the end, before I left, a year or two before I left, they built the five squads. And that became very popular.
Free education was not the norm in 1906.
In my early days, everybody paid. Well, their parents paid. But towards the end, they admitted boys who had scholarships from schools in the town, and they didn't pay. And we little snobs rather despised the scholarship boys until they started to take the top places and generally they show merit. And in my time, the mixture was completed very successfully.
Eric Webster was at Heath in the 1930s and has a memory of being on the first ever overseas trip.
There were about 20 of us all together, and accompanied by Mr. Mackley and Mr. Young, we went to Belgium, staying in London overnight first of all, and then across the Channel and to Ostend, and we stayed 3 days, I think it was, at Bruges, 3 days at Kent and 3 days in Brussels before we came back to this country. I was, I suppose, one of the youngest on that excursion, but I get the impression that it was the first of the things that are quite commonplace these days.
What year would that be?
And that would be, I think it was 1934, yes, or perhaps 1935.
So I suppose you must have been quite well off to be able to go on a trip like that. Presumably you paid to go to Heath,
did
you?
No, I didn't pay to go to Heath. I was one of these scholarship boys. I got the scholarship from Parky Lane. my parents, of course, I think they had to forego their own summer holiday in order for me to go on this excursion, which I think, if I remember rightly, took place at Easter time. But we had to do without our usual summer holiday during Wakes Week because of that. I can't remember the exact sum of money now, but I imagine it was somewhere in the region of about £30.
Was there ever any animosity between scholarship boys and fee payers?
No, none at all. It was never evident to me, at any rate. I can't recollect it at all. We sometimes regarded some of them as being, you know, they didn't ought to have been there from an academic point of view. Not that I was any great shakes academically, but because they'd sort of perhaps taken the scholarship exam and not got through and then been paid for, you know, I suppose that sometimes we held this against them, although I can't ever remember anything really nasty taking place in that respect, no.
But most of us at the time, I think, didn't care much for the masters. Now that you look back, do you have any good words to say about the masters?
Well, for most of them, I have the utmost respect. It would be invidious rather to mention any by name, I suppose. But I remember particularly Mr. Gain, who came to us fairly late in my time at Heath and was my form master for 2 years. The last 2 years I was there, Norman Gain. I remember him particularly. He was a great fan of P.G. Woodhouse, I remember. He always used, he took every opportunity to quote from Jeeves, and from that, of course, you know, even though he wasn't taking us for literature, he took us for Latin, or tried to do in my case. The idea of reading Jeeves sort of came to me from him.
One of Eric Webster's contemporaries was Eric Harrison. He became an accomplished concert pianist and was a regular contributor to the BBC Third Programme in the 1950s and 60s. In July 1967, he spoke of his childhood in Halifax.
We were a musical family. My father was an organist and my mother a pianist, and many of my earliest memories are of them playing works for four hands. And I had a brother who was a violinist. Also, we were very lucky in Halifax to have Dr. Dustin Baker, who was a magnificent organist, and he was a very fine pianist, and in fact, it was he who introduced me to Debussy's music. Then a year or so later, I got the open scholarship for piano to the Royal College of Music. And there I was very lucky in all my teachers, and with one of them, Cyril Smith, I shared a love of Rachmaninoff's music, as well as a very warm friendship, which of course goes on still. I played Rach's Paganini Rhapsody at the world premiere of the ballet Paganini at Covent Garden. I played it also a number of times at the prom concerts and in Australia and in New Zealand. Oh, and once I remember at the Albert Hall when I only had nine fingers, as the middle finger of my right hand was poisoned and quite unusable.
Eric Harrison, recorded by the BBC in 1967. Barry Seal is Euro MP for West Yorkshire. He was at Heath from 1947 to 1953. After a year in the sixth form, he left to join the RAF, but he has some misgivings about the start in life Heath gave him.
I don't think they prepared me very well. My first impressions of the school were quite remarkable, and in fact, thinking back when I first went there, I was the youngest boy in the school, because I was only 10 when I went with the selection processes, and I found it quite an awesome experience at the beginning. But I felt the school tended to concentrate on people who were perhaps more developed than myself. I regarded myself as a later developer, matured rather later, and if you weren't geared up towards Oxford or Cambridge and absolutely academic, then you weren't afforded a lot of time in the school. But some of the people I met there, of course, I've still retained contact with, and I think from that point of view it's always been useful.
What about sport? The school had a reputation for sport as well, didn't it? How did you get on?
Oh, I got on quite well. I never did very well at cricket, but certainly I played for the school at rugby, and although I liked football, and I used to have to play football subversively for the local YMCA team on a Saturday, and the headmaster didn't like that. He used to have me in quite a lot and talked about not going to the YMCA. And actually, I later played rugby for the RAF, and as far as athletics were concerned, I did quite well in athletics and used to run then for the Halifax Harriers that I developed into from school. So on the sports side, it was quite interesting. The thing I look back on many times are the old fives courts. I've never seen fives played anywhere else, and up to a few years ago I played squash quite a lot, and it was quite interesting to think of how that was similar to fives.
Have you any recollections about any of the other buildings at the school?
Oh, I've got fond recollections of the science laboratories and the gymnasium. I remember the science laboratories particularly well because there was a master there called Mr. Charlton, who was quite fierce with some of the boys who caused trouble. I remember once getting sent out of the lesson. He used to send you out, and you were supposed to go stand outside the headmaster's door, but of course we'd wander around. I remember getting sent out, two of us, and we got this bright idea of ending the lesson early before the headquarters, because he used to wander about, and so we rang the bell to end the lesson. Well, that got us in more trouble because everybody came out and realised the lesson had finished quarter of an hour early, so we really were in trouble then. It wasn't such a good idea, but I do remember the chemistry labs with quite a lot of affection, because I went into chemistry after and qualified as a chemical engineer.
And what about the masters? Have you any dear or unfavourable recollections of the masters?
Oh, some of them stick in my mind. There was a chap who taught us French, who was a very nice guy, Mr. Is it Littlefair? And I remember Mr. Birchall, who was quite authoritative in the gymnasium. But we had one chap who was very strict, called Mr. Fox, who taught us Latin. And I remember my first lesson, I think, was Latin. And he was the form master for the first form. I'll always remember him. And, of course, the headmaster, who I used to battle with all the time, Ronald Swale, who forecast that I'd be a failure. And I think he said I'd make my way selling nylon stockings on street corners. That was the kind of career he forecast for me, because I didn't fit in with his ideas of academic education.
Barry Seal also remembers the arrival of a new young maths master with a unique style of motivation.
I remember the maths master coming, Mr. Jackson, and he obviously found a very good way of motivating me, because he bet me 5 shillings, and which was a lot of money at the time, that there was no way I would get O-level in mathematics. And I was so determined, I was so affronted by this, that I worked really hard at maths, and I won the 5 shillings and got an excellent mark in maths O-level. And obviously he did realise that I needed a bit of motivation, and that was one way to do it. So I look back on him with affection as some success.
One master whose career spanned 6 generations of boys was Mr. C.O. Mackley, known as Mac to some boys and Com to others, and to his friends and family, Cecil. His career was tragically cut short in 1961, when he died at the age of 58. His sister, Miss Dorothy Mackley, lives in Halifax. She has some firm views on the type of commitment men like her brother and his contemporaries gave to the boys at Heath.
I think in those days one was used to the teacher, the schoolmaster, the schoolmistress, in any kind of school, being totally absorbed in the task. There was no thought of whether the hours were the right ones and whether they should or should not be doing extra work. It was their life, it wasn't their work. And if it was necessary to be pottering around the school all Saturday for some variety of reasons, well, that was just part of it. And if it meant hiking with the sixth form over the moors at a weekend in the middle of exams to glare their brains and stretch their legs, this was also part of it. It was not work, any of it. It was life to him. And the fact that, of course, he had, although he had the care of his parents and in later years, he was not responsible for his family and was not called upon to play a part in the domestic situation. He was left to follow his work, and what happened at home was happened round him.
Miss Mackley was a missionary in Burma and India. When she retired in 1969, her links with Heath brought her to live in Halifax. As she spoke about her work to various gatherings, people would mention her late brother and Heath.
In this way, I felt immediately as if I belonged to the family, in a sense which he had created. And although I have no relatives, neither did he, yet I feel that this is my home because of the people I fall over in all sorts of odd situations. People will suddenly say, oh, yes, oh, Miss Mackley, yes, of course, your brother, wasn't it? Some people accuse him of being my father, you see. But the name being an unusual name, they immediately realise it must be something belonging to this man about whom they'd heard so much, and about whom their fathers, their husbands, their sons constantly speak.
So for some, Heath is no more than a school, but for others, it represents home, roots and a family base. Heath has produced some high flyers like Jess Ramsden, Philip Horrocks Taylor, a British Lion, Keith Ackroyd, the managing director of Boots, and Barry Ingham, an internationally successful actor. But its real contribution is perhaps the number of solid citizens it's produced, those unsung heroes who form the bedrock of our society, both locally and nationally. Solicitors and soldiers, accountants and architects, bankers, and in Halifax, where else, building society officers.
I think what I got out of the school, which probably you don't get at many other schools, is a good sense of standards, morality. And I don't know whether that actually has helped me, but I like to feel that Heath did at least give me that, which I'm grateful to them for.
Nick Waddington is a computer project manager at the Halifax Building Society.
I was quite interested in gymnastics at one stage, and although that was only a small part of Heath's activities, you know, their sporting activities, I went on and did one or two competitions for the Halifax Gymnastics, and I think that was That was an enjoyable part of my life, I must admit, at that stage.
Nick also remembers a long-serving art master.
I remember Mr. Peace, the art teacher, who actually got my interest in art, which I then took at A-level. And he was a very relaxed master. I think I felt at home with him and so was encouraged, you know, to carry on in that subject.
One person who can't get enough of Heath is R.F. Eastwood. From 1953 to 1961, he was Rod Eastwood, one of the boys. Now he's Mr. Eastwood, one of the masters. What's the fatal attraction?
It isn't a question of sticking it. I really enjoy being here. I think the school is slowly changing. Most of the formal school occasions are just the same. Both the rituals of the school day, the morning assembly, and things like Founders Day and Sports Day, and of course the school sport, which is so important, virtually haven't changed at all. The first 15 still is of the utmost importance in the school, the cricket team, etc. With a few more recent additions, such as basketball, is quite important nowadays.
But there have been some major changes in the curriculum.
I think one way in which the school has changed and is changing to meet the needs of the future is that classics has been dropped from the syllabus entirely, with the retirement of Alan Guy last year, who was the last Latin and Greek master here. There has been no classics taught in the school at all. This has been replaced in the curriculum by such subjects as biology, computer studies, which are really, whether you like it or not, probably more suited to the needs of the present generation of heathens.
Heath Grammar School was granted its charter in 1585. In 1985, Nick Tobin is the latest in a line of head boys.
In the school at the moment we've got the computer club, which is obviously the most modern one. The advent of the computer age, it's expanded, and now we've got our own society, which has built up over the past 3 years tremendously. We've also got the Stamp Club, the Dungeons and Dragons Club, and the Dramatic Society, the Chess Club. These are the flourishing societies at the moment. Obviously, since I first came to the school, there's a lot of societies died out, like the Favourites Society, the Debating Society. That seems to have gone.
Some traditions die, the Debating Society replaced by Dungeons and Dragons. But other traditions go on, and Heath continues to produce talented young men. Nick Tobin sees his future in the bright lights of show business.
Hopefully, to Bristol University to do a degree course in drama and English, followed by a postgraduate course at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School for 1 year, which hopefully trained me to be an actor.
1985, and Heath produces a new crop of young adults. Some will be front runners, others middle distance men, and some, let's face it, will be also rans. But all will bring to their world the particular benefits of their education at Heath.